And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I believe I'm talking to America. Maybe I'm not so sure. I think that those of you in Nebraska and Kansas are in what Sarah Palin calls the real America. But, you know, if you're listening to me from New York or California or Vermont, you're not. You're not real America. You're not pro-American. You are anti-American. You are a terrorist. Now, I'm not just saying this. I mean, this is what Sarah Palin has been saying. And it makes me ask, is this what most right-wingers think? Not that we have disagreements. You know, they believe in trickle-down economics. We Democrats believe that everybody should have a chance in America, and in fact, that it helps the economy. I'm not talking about differences on policy. I'm talking about the fact that this division into red and blue states seems to be all that the Republican Party has left. I mean, we know they ran on God, gays, and guns in 2004. Do Republicans really believe that those of us that don't support them are not real Americans, are not pro-America? I mean, I assume by now you've heard this wonderful little clip by Sarah Palin in Greensboro, North Carolina, just a few days ago.
The best of America is in these small towns that we get to visit and in these wonderful little pockets of what I call real America, being here with all of you, hardworking, very patriotic, pro-America areas of this great nation. This is where we find the kindness and the goodness and the courage of everyday Americans, those who are running our factories and teaching our kids and growing our food and are fighting our wars for us, those who are protecting us in uniform, those who are protecting the virtues of freedom.
Did you get all that? Did you hear all that? Are you a pro-American American, or are you an anti-American American? Did you catch what she said? Okay, she says the best of America is in these small towns. All right, so she prefers small towns over big cities and suburbs. All right, I mean, I don't. I think that, frankly, there's a lot of good in American small towns, and there's a lot of good in American cities, and there's a lot of good in American suburbs. I'm not willing to parse and divide us. But okay, she prefers small towns. But she goes further than that. She says that the small towns are real America, that they are pro-American. They're part of the pro-American areas of this great nation. And the rest of us Americans, I guess we're all terrorists. I guess we wanted to destroy America. Let's listen again. It's so outrageous. Listen again to what she has to say, because what she has to say, I really fear, is what most right-wingers believe. This is the vice presidential nominee of the Republican Party. This isn't Jerry Falwell. This isn't, you know, some right-wing wacko. This isn't Rush Limbaugh. This is the vice presidential nominee. Listen again. Listen again to what she has to say. I'll play it over. Here we go. The best of America is in these small towns that we get to visit.
And in these wonderful little pockets of what I call real America, being here with all of you, hardworking, very patriotic, pro-America areas of this great nation.
Very pro-America areas of this great nation. Real America. If you support Sarah Palin, you're a real American. And if you don't, well, I guess you're a foreigner. I guess you're a terrorist. I guess Colin Powell, who served George W. Bush, who maxed out and gave $2,300 to the John McCain campaign, but who recognized that this kind of talk was dividing the country and supports Barack Obama for president, I guess Colin Powell's a terrorist. He's not a real American. He's not pro-America. All those firefighters on September 11th that worked their hardest to save lives in New York City, terrorists. They're in league with bin Laden. They're not pro-American. You have to be in Greensboro, North Carolina to be a pro-American. It's not just Palin that's saying this. It's also Nancy Pfaffenhauer, right? The McCain aide, talking about my state, the state of Virginia, when she said that my state, the areas that were not very southern, the areas that were Washington, D.C. suburbs, the areas where I live, because I live just across the river from Washington, D.C., were not the real Virginia. Apparently, in order to be a real American and a real Virginian, you have to be southern. Now, I'm not knocking southerners. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. I don't think that's real America either, since, heck, Nashville, unlike the rest of Tennessee, does vote for the Democrats. So which is it? Do you have to be a southerner to be a real American? I mean, the irony is that the southerners were the ones who, let's face it, tried to secede from the Union. So all those Yankees that died in Gettysburg fighting to preserve the Union, they're not real Americans. Abraham Lincoln, not a real American from Illinois. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, not a real American. John Kennedy, definitely not one of those pro-American Americans. We're all terrorists here. And the sad thing is that I really think they believe this. It's just that Sarah Palin, you know, she shoots her mouth off without thinking. But she's reading from her speech. I mean, it's not like she's going very far from her speech, right? Listen to the rest. Listen to the rest of what she has to say.
This is where we find the kindness and the goodness and the courage of everyday Americans.
Oh, in real America, you find kindness and goodness and courage. On September 11th, the firefighters that risked their lives, that died to save others, I say that they weren't kind. They weren't good. They weren't courageous. They were New Yorkers. They were evil. They were practically Bin Laden themselves.
Those who are running our factories and teaching our kids and growing our food and are fighting our wars for us, those who are protecting us in uniform, those who are protecting the virtues of freedom.
Really? Really? Only Republicans protect freedom. Only Republicans care about America. The rest of us, you know. What do you think? Is this what they really believe? Is that what they really believe? Or is this just a joke? Is this just a way to rev up the base? What is this? Why is it that Republicans have to always insist that Democrats are terrorists and unpatriotic? Remember all the flack over the lapel pin? As if Barack Obama doesn't love his country unless he wears the flag on his lapel every day? It's not just Sarah Palin. It's not just Sarah Palin. There is Nancy Pfaffenhauer, right? She is the McCain main spokesperson, right? But no, she also believes there's a real America and a fake America.
Well, like Virginia, for example, and as someone who is now in Northern Virginia, we're both right here. We get it. Northern Virginia is increasingly strong in the state. They have more political clout. Democrats have won the state house. Jim Webb, surprising victory in the Senate. It would seem to me that there could be a tipping of the balance there. Would you agree with that?
Now, here's Nancy Pfaffenhauer.
You know, maybe that's where he has to focus his energy now.
Well, Kevin, I certainly agree that Northern Virginia has gone more Democratic. You know, as a proud resident of Oakton, Virginia, I can tell you that the Democrats have just come in from the District of Columbia and moved into Northern Virginia, and that's really what you see there. But the rest of the state, real Virginia, if you will, I think will be very responsive to Senator McCain's message.
Got that? The rest of the state, real Virginia, one-third of the state's population happens to live in Northern Virginia, but they're not real. No, the fact that they vote for Democrats means that they're fake. They're false. They're, as Sarah Palin might say, they're just not pro-American Americans. You know, Osama bin Laden clearly attacked the wrong place. He should have joined with the New Yorkers and attacked North Carolina. They could have agreed together. since, well, let's face it, New Yorkers and Pennsylvanians and, you know, people from California and Washington and Illinois and Wisconsin and Minnesota and Iowa and all these blue state areas, well, since, you know, they're all not pro-American, Bin Laden obviously should have gone after Oklahoma and Utah and all that rock red part of the state where people care more about their guns and persecuting gay people. Are we going to let them get away with this? I'll tell you, the nice thing about this election is for once they're not getting away with it. For once, people recognize that this is a joke. We are undergoing the worst economic depression since the Great Depression. And I guess people in blue states just aren't real. It's not just blue states. People in blue areas of red states just aren't pro-American enough. No, you're only pro-American if you support John McCain and George W. Bush. You're only pro-American if you support torture, if you believe in shredding the Constitution and throwing away the Bill of Rights. How is it pro-American, I ask you, to believe in spying on every American, in throwing away the Fourth Amendment? Is it now pro-American to be against the Constitution? What does this mean? Do these women even know what they're talking about? Sarah Palin, Nancy Pfotenhauer? I mean, the host, the radio host, who was talking to Nancy Pfotenhauer, actually gave her a chance to take back her comments. Let's listen to the rest of the interview.
And remember that, you know, you've got places in other states like northern Wisconsin, the Iron Range of Minnesota, south central and southeastern Pennsylvania, the St. Louis suburbs and the rural areas of Missouri that are very responsive to our message. And again, we're taking it to him in Pennsylvania and New Hampshire. He's having to fight to defend there, as you can tell, because he's deployed people like the Clintons out in Pennsylvania. And every speech Joe Biden gives, he says, "I'm from Scranton." You don't know what else he's going to say, but he sure gets that line in.
Hey, Nancy, I'm going to give you a chance to climb back off that ledge. Did you say real Virginia?
I did say outside of Northern. Well, I mean real Virginia, because Northern Virginia is where I've always been. But real Virginia, I take to be this part of the state that is more southern in nature, if you will. Northern Virginia is really Metro D.C., as you're aware, Kevin.
Nancy Pfotenhauer, senior policy advisor with the McCain campaign, joining us from Arlington, not really Virginia. Nancy, thanks.
Thanks.
Did you catch that? I mean, I think the host was very generous. He was quite literal. He said, "I'm going to give you, Nancy, a chance to come back off that ledge." In other words, I know you've gaffed. You know you've gaffed. You've given a gaff. This is going to be in the news. Don't you want to back off now? And she dug it deeper. She said, which is true, I admit it, Northern Virginia is more culturally like metropolitan Washington, D.C. That's true. And the rest of the Virginia is more like the South. That's true. But whoever said the South was the only real American place? When do we stop pitting American against American? Why is it that, you know, Texas is considered American and, I don't know, Los Angeles isn't? Why is Alabama American and Pennsylvania isn't? Is New York City not part of this great land? I mean, you know, you would never look. There are all kinds of Northerners that look down on Southerners. I know. I've been up north. I know how it is. Yes, there are New Yorkers that look down on the rest of the country. And they call them uneducated and things like that, unsophisticated. That's true. There are some, sure, but they never call them un-American. And if you want to pick on New York for being a crowded big city where there's, you know, not enough trees and honking, fine, go for it. But New York is every as much a part of America as Wasilla. In fact, I think it's a more important part of America than Wasilla. It's amazing to me. I'd like to hear from you. I want to know what you think. 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I want to know if you think that they actually believe this nonsense. I mean, obviously the point is to divide us. I get that. But do you think that Republicans actually believe that Democrats, city folk and suburban people aren't real American. That if you don't live in a small town, well, you're just not real. You're not, just not pro-American. Do they really think that every single person in a small town is honest and intelligent and, oh, believes in family and apple pie and America and the flag? And every person that lives in a city or a suburb or, God forbid, Washington, D.C., that font of evil, is by definition, I don't know, child molesters? Anti-American terrorists? You know, you wouldn't think they would say it out loud. But I think they believe it. I think they believe it. I don't think it's just Sarah Palin and Nancy Pfotenhauer. I think if you scratch a conservative from a small town, they will tell you quite openly, we're from real America. And the rest of you, you're just anti-American. And on the line, I have Kevin from, let's face it, the most anti-American, unreal place in all of the United States, Brooklyn. Kevin, welcome to the show. Though I don't even know if I should have you on. Sarah Palin apparently thinks you're a terrorist.
You know what we need to do? Take all these so-called real Americans and fire them and deport them back to red states, because all the real, all the fake America is where all the jobs are, which they seem to suck off.
That's true. Blue America has always been a better economic engine than red America. It always has been.
Joe Scarborough, who lives in Manhattan, I'm sick and tired of hearing him, you know, talk about blue America and the Northeastern elite. Well, you know what? Go back to Tallahassee or wherever the hell they came from.
Let me ask you, Kevin, because you are from one of the bluest parts of blue America. I mean, you know, Nancy Pfotenhauer attacked me in Northern Virginia, but, you know, I border at least real America. You're way up there in God forbid, Brooklyn. I mean, it's even further away real America than Manhattan. How does that – I don't know if you're from New York originally, are you?
I am. Born and raised.
You are. Okay. How does these kind of comments affect your New York sense? What do you think when you hear Sarah Palin or Nancy Pfotenhauer tell you you're not real or you're not pro-American?
Well, I think they're just bloody racists, you know, and that's all there is. And
is this a way of being racist without saying we're racist?
Exactly.
Is that a way? So this is all a way to say, hey, Obama's not one of us. He's black, but we can't say he's black. So we'll say he's not real.
Yes.
It's code word, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, they're very good in talking in code now. You know,
I heard Rush Limbaugh trash Colin Powell.
Yeah.
I mean, he loved Colin Powell when Colin Powell was, in, you know, Secretary of State and working in the Bush administration and was very loyal, in fact, far too loyal, if you ask me. But now that he's, you know, coming out from under that shadow and speaking his mind, Rush Limbaugh said that Colin Powell only supported Barack Obama because he's black. He said
Colin Powell, and I'm going into Russia's head. Forgive me for a second.
It's a very dangerous place. I hope you make it out alive, Kevin. Okay. Watch yourself there. Give yourself a cord. Tie it on a cord.
Yeah.
I can pull you out if you get stuck.
But
go ahead.
This is what Rush really wanted to say, is he was black when he blindly supported Bush. He's a you-know-what now since he supports Barack Obama. And that's what Rush really wanted to say.
You know, I got to say, we're 2 weeks from Election Day. Mm. And, you know, without being complacent and, you know, and we have to fear complacency. In fact, I was just reading the other day that apparently Obama's having some trouble in Pennsylvania because he's doing so well that some volunteers aren't showing up because they think, Obama's got in the bag. So I do not want to be complacent. I'm not arguing for that. But it does look like if the election were held today, and some people are already voting today, Barack Obama will be our next president of the United States. And it's really, I mean, we're on the verge of history here. And I just wonder what will happen to the Rush Limbaughs and the Sarah Palins and the Nancy Pfotenhauers. Well, I don't think we'll hear from her again. Will they retreat into this kind of rage, this sort of where they're simply like about to explode every day? It'll be fascinating to see.
Well, the thing is, these people, both them, okay, and this is why you got to be wary of the media and the incestuous relationship with with politicians. It's kind of like they feed off of one another, and they nurture one another. It's like, again, I don't expect to get a straight shake off of MSNBC or CNBC, because Andrea Mitchell, she's in partnership with Greenspan. They've been married. They're married.
For decades now.
Yeah, or they were in a relationship. I don't know how long they were married, but you understand what I'm saying? So how do you expect to get a fair shake off of the news or off of any American media outlet? Cause it's been
and they're supposed to be the pro-liberal part, NBC.
Yeah.
But I guess my question for you, Kevin, is, and I, you know, I, what I really need, I guess, as a conservative, I'll tell you, I raised this question last night on a radio station that is more conservative, and no, high conservatives call in and they challenged Obama's tax plan, et cetera, but they never challenged my question. They never answered my question. Do they really think that those of us that don't live in Wasilla, Alaska, or Podunk, you know, Oklahoma, in tiny little towns, do they really think we're not pro-American?
Well,
it's this weird notion that you have to be intolerant. You got to be a little racist. You got to be homophobic. You got to believe take the Bible literally in order to be a real American.
Yes, they do, and you know why? My own experience in red state America is that they cannot stomach diversity.
Why is that? I mean, racism has to be taught. Their towns are too. I mean, here's what strikes me, though, Kevin. I mean, you know, and I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, which is the South, no question about it. It may be a little more enlightened than the rest of the South, but it's Tennessee. You know, I think about states that are to the South, where I grew up, Mississippi and Alabama. A state like Mississippi, here is the highest African American population in the country is in Mississippi. I think it's 40%. It might be 37%. It's more than a third. And you have one of the most conservative states in the United States, which means the white folk are voting not 60 or 70%, but probably 80% or more.
The thing is, there's a huge conservative streak within the black community.
Well, that's true, too.
Probably more conservative than most mainstream white people.
On certain issues.
I've encountered that. Living in northern central Florida and traveling throughout this country.
You know, you raise a good point, Kevin. One of the things that's concerning me is that I've been looking at the California constitutional vote that's coming up in 2 weeks on Election Day, and it's a vote to overturn the California Supreme Court decision allowing gay people to marry. And the state of California, if you look at just the polls, people who support equal rights are doing pretty good. There's about 60% or so that believes that gay people should have the same rights as straight people, and maybe 40% against. So I thought this thing was going to fail in flying colors. But now they're taking polls and they're looking at likely voters, not just registered voters. And because of Barack Obama, African Americans are understandably excited and are expected to attend the polls in record numbers. But the problem for proponents of marriage equality is that a lot of these same African Americans who are going to vote overwhelmingly for Barack Obama are going to vote against gay people in California.
And
they're worried about it, the amendment. They really are.
Yeah, and I've explained this to more conservative elements within the black community that, you know, it's about human rights. The same thing we, you know, meaning black folks, have experienced, it's about human rights. And it goes through one ear and out the other. It's not, you know.
Well, and that's because of churches. I mean, right? I mean, the irony is that the reason why the black church is so powerful is because in slavery times and in Jim Crow times, black folk couldn't meet in rooms and talk about political things except in church. It was the only place that white people allowed black folk to gather and talk about anything remotely political.
Yeah. Then you have the self-serving preachers who feed off of that power. Because, you know, it's like,
it's not self-serving ones. I mean, you have some, I mean, listen, Martin Luther King, you know, God rest his soul, was a preacher. So you have good preachers and bad preachers in the black community.
Well,
and What do you ask you this though? Do you think that preachers have gotten more conservative lately? Do you think that black preachers?
Yes, because now they're getting into the same channels that like a lot of, and you know I don't want to down certain churches, but to me, okay, my ancestry is not from this country. My ancestry is West Indian, and I kind of look at things like similar.
His name is Colin Powell, actually.
Yeah,
that's his ancestry
actually,
too.
From the same island, Jamaica.
Really? Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I don't have the accent. I was raised here. Like,
it's such a cool accent, Kevin. That's too bad. I like that kind of, you know, lilting. Anyway, I was gonna try to do it, but I do it so badly. I think I won't even try.
Okay, but the thing is, like a lot of Jews who are predominantly white in this country, even though the only similarities is the whites, you know, is the race. The religion has you on a different viewpoint than most mainstream white Americans. And it's the same thing with a lot of West Indians, especially West Indians who are not Americanized, because all too often we are lumped in as just black people. And, you know, even though, yes, we are black, and but we do have a different viewpoint of America.
Well, and I think it's one of the reasons why Colin Powell is...
Yeah.
What I just could say, one of the reasons why Colin Powell is very different from someone like Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton, and frankly, the reason Barack Obama is very different. I mean, neither Barack Obama nor Colin Powell, nor I presume you, Kevin, are descendants of slaves, and that's not, you know, I don't say that as a compliment or an insult. It's neither. It's just a fact. And there is a certain cultural legacy, I think, of being a descendant of slaves that leads many African Americans to be. I guess I'm trying to find the right words for it.
Docile, not knowing the
right. What's that? I didn't want to say it. I kind of was letting you say it. I do think that there are more African Americans who are descendants of slaves are more angry, and understandably so, for the extreme injustice of slavery and Jim Crow than immigrants or children of immigrants, people like Barack Obama, son of a guy from Kenya.
We're all descendants of slaves. Whether we know that, put it to this way: if we weren't descendants of slaves, we wouldn't end up in the New World, and that's whether you're black.
Wait, I said I'm a descendant of slaves myself. It was back in Egypt 3,000 years ago, but you know we still teach about that too. So maybe all of us have been enslaved at one point or another.
It's just, you know, people know their history. You know, indentured servitude, which primarily was on the Irish and Germans, was not much better than slavery.
That's true.
It's just this consumption. It's just the racism that exists.
Kevin, I want to ask you what will be the difference? I want to say when. I guess I don't dare. I'll say if Barack Obama is elected president. But I'm getting excited and I'm trying to tamper that down. But okay, but when and if Barack Obama is elected president of the United States, how will that affect the African-American community, and specifically the difference between the descendants of slaves and those that are descendants of immigrants? Because I think those that are descendants of immigrants, like yourself or Colin Powell or Barack Obama, have a much more optimistic view of America than those who are descendants of slaves. Now, obviously, I'm speaking in broad patterns, but overall, in terms of the average.
You know what I think needs to be done for America to really change, honestly? Hmm. Give the UN some teeth.
The United Nations?
Yeah.
Nah, that won't change
anything. Follow through on what Woodrow Wilson did, you know, because that's really going to make a lot of this local stuff irrelevant.
Oh, no, I'm going to disagree with you, Kevin. I'm going to disagree with you. I think you're even more of a woolly-headed idealist than I am.
you know, I'm talking from a person from the third world, because to me, honestly, there's very little difference between black America and white America.
You think the difference is between native-born American and immigrant America?
I think it's between American and the rest of the world.
Well, that's true.
Okay.
But that ain't going to change anything soon. I mean, the idea of American exceptionalism is so fundamentally part of America. I mean, even the idea, you know, with Sarah Palin taken back to where we started, said that you know only the Republicans are pro-American. And I disagree because I think that we blue staters are just as myopically patriotic as the rest of us. I mean, I'll even include myself in that. As much as I have my eyes open and I have been to the rest of the world, I've even lived outside of the United States for a year and probably visited more foreign countries than the great majority of Americans, I still think we're the best country in the world. And even, I, you know, so I'll just put myself in that category too,
okay.
Even with all our problems.
There's nothing wrong with thinking that way. Every hell, you know.
I'm sure the English feel that way. The French feel that way. Most people in the world.
It's about support.
We believe our sports teams are the best. You know, I mean, the New Yorkers are the Yankees and Boston the Red Sox. And
nothing wrong with rooting for the home team.
Of course.
But the thing is, when you want to function as good government, we need to look beyond ourselves and look beyond the borders of the United States. The United States has given the best government in the world, and that's going to be the contribution, which goes back to ancient Greece. But the United States has made it where anyone can have the rights, have those basic human rights. Where we fall short is
on human rights. You know, 8 years ago, saying that it would be just so much more believable. I mean, I think
this
we can.
This is just a speed bump.
Luckily, because if McCain's elected, I'm afraid it's all over. But
well,
I don't think
if McCain is elected, a lot of people are going to leave. And you know what's going to happen if McCain gets elected? I could tell you, because I'm thinking as a person from the third world outside of America now.
Yeah.
Okay? But a citizen of the world? America's going to be left behind in every sense of the matter.
I think that's right.
Okay.
I think that's right. I fear it's already happened.
Because
I fear it's already
is,
happened. We have such huge debt, such massive problems.
Yeah.
You know, our bridges are falling apart. And you know, I was watching on TV, I heard a commentator say, and I wish I remember who it was, that if you look at American history, the times when we haven't been at war are like, you know, 2 or 3 years max.
Yeah.
The great majority of American history, we've been at war at some point or another, and that just costs a lot of resources.
Yeah.
It's very, I mean, totally apart from the morality of it and the people dying and the massive casualties, it's expensive to constantly be at war. That's what brought down the Roman Empire. And that's what brought down the British Empire. That's what brought down the Soviet Union.
Yeah. But it's just that, you know what's happening now as we speak? The third world, their middle class is expanding.
That's true.
And so it's like the United States is no longer the chief provider of goods and services anymore globally. You have competition, China, India, and all that. And it's probably the best time now to be a person from the third world. Okay?
Well, and they own us, too. I mean, China owns us. Saudi Arabia owns us. It's not just oil. Yeah. I mean, all the oil companies own us, but oil countries. But China, I mean, it's not because of oil that China owns us.
I'm talking even a small country like Jamaica or Haiti or even, you know.
Tell us about Haiti,
African.
Kevin. I think Haiti is, I mean, it's pretty dysfunctional. I don't know about Haiti.
But, like, even like a country like small like Jamaica, because now we're in a position not only just to play two major players, we can play five or six, because we could play the United States against Russia, against the European Union, against China, against India.
But isn't Jamaica and other little countries hurting because of the economic crisis? I mean, I read that Iceland, for example, banks were destroyed.
They still have that colonial dependency mentality.
On Great Britain, still?
Excuse me?
On Great Britain? Jamaica still depends very heavily on Great Britain, still?
United Kingdom? We depend on Great Britain and Canada for certain things, yeah. And, you know, like, and that's good to a certain degree, but now, you know, because there was something which was very much a threat, you know, like when a lot of these countries became independent, called the Non-Aligned Movement. And this is...
I remember it.
Countries. And that was the biggest threat to the United States. Because what they said was, you know what, we're not going to ally ourselves with the Soviet Union or the United States. We have our own foreign policy, and we'll do business with whatever country can give us the best for our needs. And we really need to go there. And now is the time to do it, because the United States is no longer chairman of the board. We've been knocked down to just a board member now. And if we don't want to end up as being a junior partner, we better vote for Barack Obama.
Kevin, I'm just curious. Are both your parents born in Jamaica, or are they born
in They're born in Jamaica.
I'm the very first one born in this country. That's interesting.
My brother
because I think your perspective is very much one of a first-generation American.
And I spent half my childhood in Jamaica.
Okay. So, I've been to Jamaica. It's a beautiful place. It's been many years since I've been there.
I find the people very positive,
very friendly, a lot of very friendly energy. But I wonder about a place like Jamaica because, I mean, unlike Haiti, it has a functioning democracy and a functioning economy. I mean, like I said, Haiti, I don't think I'd put Haiti in the same category as Jamaica.
Haiti is totally dysfunctional. There's a reason.
No, it is. It's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, and it's just the people there really suffer. But my question is, I guess, when you have a massive economic crisis like we're having in the United States, my impression is that sends out these shock waves of harm to the rest of the world. Like I said, Iceland, for example, a country of 500,000 people that is actually fairly well run and a fairly stable democracy, had its banks go bust because of the United States. I would think that Jamaica, being much closer to the United States, basically surrounded by us, that our economic troubles would wreak havoc on Jamaica. Is it happening?
It will. But I think and this is something for the powers that be. I'm working on a manuscript. You know, I don't want to do any plug, use your show as a plug. And I'm working on a manuscript of how, Jamaica can be free of that, or any third world country can be free of that. And one of the things is, again, yes, we do catch a cold when America sneezes. The whole world does. Don't get me wrong. But what we need to do now, and America too, any country in the world, we need to become more independent, have local economies.
Well, see, I'm not so sure, Kevin. I mean, it works the other way too. If the world sneezes, we catch a cold too. We have an interdependent global economy.
Yeah. Well, there has to be a balancing act, and there has to be something along the lines of there's certain things that need to be produced here and nearby.
I tell you, it's a fine line. It's a fine line. I look at, and that's why actually I like Obama, because I like his fine line on it. He's not, as some on the left are, an extreme protectionist. And on the other hand, he's not a pure free trader either. Like most things, I support it in moderation. We need to be careful about competing with countries that have labor and environmental standards that don't match ours. It's not fair to, have some child in Thailand working, some 9-year-old making Nikes or whatever, and selling those shoes along with union factory workers in the United States. But on the other hand, I don't like the idea of not being dependent on the globe and just looking inward and just on ourselves. I think that weakens everybody. So I think we need a moderation here.
And I agree with you 100%. I just think, and I'm going to bring it back home to the United States, what I'm getting at. Why is Florida importing oranges from Brazil to make orange juice?
I don't know. I can't imagine Florida is a... Are their oranges better than ours, or is it just cheaper labor,
no,
I suspect?
No, it's labor, and the orange industry in Florida is just a museum piece. It's something that you show the tourists, and they go. And it's the same thing with Jamaica. Jamaica, which is known for sugar, known for oranges and all that, why are we importing oranges from the United States and other countries? It's like, there's certain things that should not be imported, especially when we've been known to make that. Tropicana...
Go ahead.
Yeah. Tropicana.
No, go ahead. Tropicana.
More oranges from Brazil and Mexico than it does Florida and California.
And I have to say, I guess I'm not surprised now that I think about it, because of labor costs. And the irony is that we have immigrants coming from countries like Mexico, like Jamaica, mostly from countries like Mexico and Central America. who are willing to work for very little money. And there's this huge backlash against them as being, you know, they're taking our jobs and all this stuff. There's huge backlash against them, and yet they do make our economy more competitive with things like unskilled labor. To me, the answer to immigration is not to close our doors, but to welcome them in and at the same time train American workers so we're making computer chips while our new Mexican immigrants are picking oranges, if you will.
Well, I think what needs to happen is unionization.
Well, that too.
Okay, because...
That too, but I'm afraid that then people just go to Mexico, right? Then they just go and they import the oranges from Brazil.
Well, the thing
is, you can't unionize the whole world, at least not easily.
Higher tariffs, too. Tariffs and unionization. Double-edged sword.
It is. It is. I'm not sure how we're going to pay all this debt back. We've got China, because of globalization, it's actually been easier for us to put up the massive debt that we've been having. Been easier for America to run up this huge credit card bill, and China's been doing it. And it'll be fascinating to see how long they're going to extend our line of credit, because at some point we got to pay it back.
Yeah. And the thing is, the reason why we're in debt is because we make nothing. Money.
No, we make some things.
Like
we
what?
Make lawsuits. We
paper.
Silicon Valley makes some good chips. We still do some computer
not
stuff.
Not anymore. They're made in Taiwan. They
well, but we give the no
the research and development may be in Silicon Valley.
Right. We have Hollywood. We've got travel industry.
That's all. Paper.
It's not that much, is it?
But we need tangible goods.
Yeah. No, all we have is services. And one of the things that I found fascinating is when we were selling these hugely complex credit derivative swaps, these massive trillions, and one study says there's $60 trillion of these instruments, which buy up all these subprime mortgages, and we were selling them to Saudi Arabia and China and whoever.
Yeah.
And I remember back when it was happening 2-3 years ago, and I thought, well, you know what? That's okay, because all these extremely rich people, these oil sheikhs and others who are getting all the American money for oil and so forth, and oil companies and people on Wall Street, they're buying up these worthless pieces of paper. I'm not. So great, when it goes broke, the people who deserve to go broke will go broke. And it didn't happen that way.
Well, the thing
they sneezed and we caught a cold.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, again, they're buying out all this stuff. They're not buying it out of the kindness of their heart. They're buying it to renegotiate terms of trade, which is going to happen down the line. Because God help us if some of those oil sheets start demanding gold instead of dollars.
I'm scared of China. I'm scared of the oil sheiks. These are not democracies. You know, at least with England and France, we may pick on them from time to time. But I don't feel like they're going to turn on us. We may have disagreements with them, but they are our friends. But China, Saudi Arabia, these are not countries we can trust.
Yes.
And yet we are letting them own us. And the one thing I think that Barack Obama, and I'm so glad that he talks about it so often, is energy. I mean, really, we haven't had an election over energy before. I mean, it's mentioned, Kerry mentioned it. Al Gore, obviously, it's global warming is his heart and soul, but most presidential candidates, it's just one thing. It's down low at taxes and Social Security and foreign policy, and it's just way down on the list. And Barack Obama has raised it up, recognizing that it is the most important issue of our time. We're never going to be free.
We're fighting a three-front war over energy.
Three-front war. So we've got troops on the ground in Iraq. What are our other two fronts?
No, I said a three-front war. Iraq, Afghanistan, because you can't have one without the other. And the war on ourselves with all these deportations and stuff like that.
I don't know. I'll agree with you on Iraq. I think Iraq's all about oil. But to me, it's the big debt is the problem. We have this massive debt. And the fact that, our car companies.
Yeah.
They're not. It all has to do with the way corporations are set up. I mean, if you had a car company it actually rewarded people the way capitalism is supposed to reward people. You come up with a good idea, and you're supposed to be rewarded. That's the way capitalism is supposed to work. You know, I never understood Bill Gates. He's a multi-billionaire, but his products don't work as well as Apple's products. And I think the reason is because, well, you know, he's a better salesman than he is a maker of technology. And the same is true with the car companies. They're so worried about selling to America, you know, selling the Hummers and everything that we wanted 10 years ago, that they didn't have the foresight to recognize that cheaper cars, electric cars, environmentally friendly cars were the wave of the future. And now they're finally getting it, and it's almost too late.
Yeah, and those what was Martin Luther King's issue with too late? The two most tragic words in the English language. Too late.
Well, I'm glad that we're finally getting it now. I can't believe we had a president and a vice president and a national security advisor, all from the oil industry. And the country hardly knows.
It's all about lobbying. It's all about.
Yeah, I don't think most Americans, if you ask them today, if you ask most Americans what business George Bush and Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice were in before their current jobs, how many Americans could name that it was the oil industry for all three? I mean, horn listeners could, of course.
Very.
I don't think they could. I don't think they know that. I mean, Bush, they'll think of something in, you know, baseball. Cheney, they'll have no idea. Condoleezza Rice, they may remember she was a professor. They don't realize that all of them are oil people. Yeah.
Well, it's all about lobbying. They, you know, and the oil industry, oil and defense. And, you know, look into this Carlyle Group thing. You know, it's a scary thing. All of them.
Carlyle, Halliburton, all of them.
No. It's all roads lead to Carlyle Group.
Well, I don't know that all roads lead. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, Kevin. I don't know that all roads lead to Carlyle Group, but many of them do. Many of them do.
Okay. And pay attention, you know, well, okay. But do your research. You know, kind of like Mr. X and JFK. Do your research. But
I have, and it's very scary.
Huh?
Well, thanks for calling in, Kevin. I always appreciate when you do. You always have so much to say.
Have a good day.
Okay. Thanks so much. And, folks, if you want to call as well, toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I'm going to take a quick break and be right back after this.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com. A place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm curious if any of you have been following the Ted Stevens trial. I have, but of course it's right down the road from me in Washington, D.C. And I guess it typifies all the difference that Sarah Palin sees between places like Alaska and places like Washington. In Washington, if you get gifts from somebody who you give advantages to in the law, it's called bribery. That's what we call it. In Alaska, they just call it unwanted gifts. Ted Stevens, of course, was on the stand. He is the longest-serving Republican in the Senate, 84 years old, used to be the president pro tempore, which means that he was fourth in line to the president after, after it would have been Bush, then Cheney, then Speaker Hastert. And then, yes, Ted Stevens could have been president of the United States. And he was getting, quite upset right there on the stand, asking about all these expensive gifts, the massaging chair and the stained glass window and the puppy and the everything. Now, in the Senate, you're allowed to get gifts. You just have to report them. And the reason you report them is because, I don't know, when you have the head of an oil company like Vico giving you a gift, and then you turn around and you give subsidies from taxpayers to the same oil company, some people might think it's bribery. So Ted Stevens was required to report these things. Instead, he just said, it's all my wife. It's all my wife's fault. Blame the wife. It's funny because I think this trial would be getting a lot of coverage were it not 2 weeks before an election. As it is, I don't think many people are watching at all. But I'll tell you one thing. If he's indicted, I think we get a new Democratic senator. Good guy, Mark Begich, the mayor of Anchorage. And if he's not convicted, I think we'll have Ted Stevens back till the day he dies. At which point, Governor Palin will appoint a replacement. So the trial is important. It's also fun to watch. It's nice to see how the mighty have fallen. It's also a good reminder to politicians, Republican and Democrat, though most of them are Republican, that you know what? You shouldn't take gifts from people that you're going to give taxpayer dollars to. Whether you officially call it bribery or not, it's just not cool. We'll see. Meanwhile, there are lots of other legal battles across the nation, most notably in Ohio, where Republicans are doing what Republicans do best, trying to prevent people from voting. Have you been following this? The Secretary of State of Ohio, Jennifer Bruner, is someone I have been praising up and down. She is 180 degrees. Different from Kenneth Blackwell, the former Ohio Secretary of State. You remember him. He was the one who decided that in Democratic areas in 2004, they'd have maybe two voting machines serving tens of thousands of people, and in the Republican areas, they'd have dozens. That's why all those people in Cleveland were out there in the rain, waiting for hours, until some elderly people had to turn around and go home. Of course, if Kerry had won Ohio, he would have been our president right now, and we wouldn't be in this economic mess or this war in Iraq. Kenneth Blackwell had a lot to do with it, which, by the way, reminds me, if you can vote early, vote early. This is going to be a major, major election. It's going to be very, very crowded. In Virginia, I can't vote early because you have to have a reason, and I don't have one. I'm not going to lie on those forms. Maybe not the first or second day of early voting. Those are already very crowded, they're telling us. But over the next 3, 4, 5 days, if you can vote early, please do. And if you can't, try to make sure you can go at a time when there won't be a lot of crowds. It's going to be a very busy election day. And there are no excuses. I had to wait 3 hours to vote. No excuses. I don't care if you have to wait 10 hours. This election's too important. But anyway, Kenneth Blackwell was the one making sure there were very long lines in Ohio. In the Democratic areas, encouraging Democrats to go home, and of course that's why we lost in 2004, even if the machines were valid. Well, Ohio threw the bums out. Good for Ohio. They threw their corrupt Republican governor out, they threw their corrupt Republican Secretary of State out, and they elected really good people like Ted Strickland, the governor of Ohio, and Jennifer Bruner, the Secretary of State, who is so good that she's getting death threats. because she's protecting Ohioans' right to vote. And there is nothing that Republicans hate more than protecting a citizen's right to vote. After all, as you heard from Sarah Palin, Democrats aren't real Americans. They aren't pro-American. They're as good as terrorists. So what happened in Ohio? Well, if you look at your registration lists across the United States, it may or may not surprise you to know that 30% of all registered voters have some discrepancy between their voter registration card and their driver's license and their Social Security card. I suppose I'm one of them. My middle name, which I never use, is on my driver's license. It's not on my voter ID. I don't know whether it's on my Social Security. Maybe it's my middle initial. But that's different. And so the Republicans will take someone like me and say, aha, there's a discrepancy. You can't vote. And they would put this big question mark by my name. And that's what they tried to do with 200,000 people in Ohio. And then what happens? Well, you are allowed to vote provisionally. Thank God for that tiny piece of goodness in a overall bad piece of legislation called the Help America Vote Act in 2002. But it takes a lot of time. You have to read a bunch of forms. You have to sign a bunch of forms. The poll official has to sign a bunch of forms. It leads to a lot of delay. And so if you challenge voters who have these discrepancies, as the Republicans tried to do in Ohio, you can make for very long lines. Kenneth Blackwell may be gone, but they can bring back the lines of Ohio. Just like they can send notices to people who've lost their homes and say, ah, you've lost your mortgage, now you can't vote. The whole purpose, of course, is to make voting more difficult and hard in Democratic areas so that Democratic voters stay home. Don't do it. We fought too hard in the civil rights era and everywhere else to give the right to vote, women's movement, everyone, to every American. Don't let them stop you from voting. And Jennifer Bruner, the Ohio Secretary of State, is fighting them, has fought them, and lo and behold, has won even in the United States Supreme Court. Ohioans will get to vote. But they're trying it again, state after state. If they can't win the election on numbers, well, they're going to win it based on trying to deny you and me the right to vote. I'll be happy when this election is over. I'll be very happy when they declare Barack Obama president of the United States, the Democrats increasing in the Senate and in the House, but that'll only happen if you do your work. Don't let them stop you from voting. Don't let them stop your neighbor from voting. And if someone tries to tell anyone you see in the voter line that they can't vote, you raise holy hell. You make sure that person can vote. It is your patriotic duty. That's all for the Inside Scoop. Tune in tomorrow. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off.